All right, welcome back for another deep dive. You know how we do things here? We gotta cut through all that noise, get straight to the core knowledge you need, and we gotta do it fast.
That's what we aim for.
Especially for all of you out there deep in the world of law. Today, we've got a case straight out of Florida Bruner v. State Commission on Ethics.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
I think this is gonna be like your all-access pass to this just legal showdown
It really is.
involving ethics. We've got the power of the governor
The courts.
and just like, where do the courts fit into all
Yeah,
this?
big question.
You sent over some really interesting stuff about this case, and I think it is ripe for unpacking.
Absolutely. What makes Bruner so instructive is, you know how it just kind of throws all these key pieces of how our government is structured like right into the spotlight? It's not just about some ethical misstep. It turns into this really significant question about, where does the power stop and start for these different branches of government?
Right, so obviously you've got the initial ethics investigation, but what were the fundamental legal clashes at play here?
So really at the heart of Bruner, it gives us these two big legal battles, and they're kind of tied together.
Okay.
So the first, as you mentioned, comes from the Florida Commission on Ethics, and they said Raymond Bruner, now he was the clerk of the circuit court,
Okay.
violated state ethics laws. Specifically, we're talking about section 112.3136 of the Florida statutes.
Okay.
Now, the key with this whole section is to understand its purpose.
Right.
It's there to try and prevent public officials from basically using their job, using their position for their own gain.
Makes sense.
So in Bruner's case, this involved allegations of sexual harassment he was directing towards employees and applicants.
Okay, so that's the first layer, misuse of power. But then that second layer, this is where things get really interesting constitutionally.
It
The
does.
courts and the
Yeah.
governor, like, seemingly at odds.
Exactly. The second big legal challenge here revolves around the separation of powers. It's that super important principle that basically keeps any single branch of government from getting too powerful, you know?
Checks and balances.
Exactly. It's all about checks and balances.
Okay.
So the specific question was, could a court actually temporarily block the governor's power to suspend a state official? And this is key. The governor is given that power directly by the Constitution when that official has been found to violate these ethics laws.
Right.
So this really digs into the heart of like, okay, what does governmental authority really look like, and what limits do each of these branches face?
Yeah, so lay out the timeline for us. How did we go from, an ethics commission finding to a constitutional standoff?
All right, so we start with the Ethics Commission. They're investigating these allegations against Bruner. Ultimately, they determine that, yep, he violated 112.3136.
Go.
So they issue a recommendation to the governor, and they say, hey, you should suspend Bruner from his office.
Right, so they don't have the power to do that themselves. They just make a recommendation to the governor.
Right. It goes to the governor. Okay.
Now, Bruner, he's not just going to take this lying down.
Right.
He exercises his right to appeal the commission's finding.
Okay.
And during this appeal, he asks for and gets a stay from the court. This is under a different section of the Florida statute, section 112.3241. Now, this stay, it was meant to prevent the governor from actually acting on the suspension recommendation while the appeal is going on.
Okay, so it's like a judicial pause button, if you will.
Exactly, a pause button.
But it sounds like the governor wasn't really willing to wait.
Yeah, and that's the real issue here.
Okay.
So despite the court saying, hold on, the governor went ahead and issued an executive order formally suspending Bruner.
Whoa.
And this action directly challenges that stay from the court.
Right.
And that sparks this constitutional conflict about the separation of powers,
Yeah.
basically forcing the courts to decide, like, okay, who really has the final say in this specific situation?
So now we've got the court stepping in, trying to referee this power struggle.
So what were the big questions they had to answer to even begin to resolve this?
So there were three main legal questions they had to grapple with.
Okay.
First, did Bruner's actions, the sexual harassment, did that actually qualify as a violation of 112.3136?
Yeah.
That's the statute that prevents misusing your public position for personal benefit.
Right.
So they had to look at his conduct and say, okay, does it actually fall under what that law is talking about?
Makes sense.
Now, the second one, this is really the heart of the separation of powers issue.
Okay.
Could 112.3241, that's the law that lets the court issue a stay, could that constitutionally stop the governor's power to suspend an official even temporarily?
Right.
And we have to remember the suspension power comes directly from Article 4, Section 7 of the Florida Constitution.
Right.
So this is where the legislature is basically trying to create this procedural hurdle for the governor to do something that the Constitution says he can do.
Right.
And that becomes the central conflict. And then the last question the court had to figure out, did the fact that the governor actually suspended Bruner while the appeal was still going on, did that make Bruner's challenge to the Ethics Commission moot?
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So did it make it pointless?
Okay. So let's break down each of those questions.
Right.
What did the court decide about the ethics violation itself?
Okay. So on that first point, the court sided with the Ethics Commission.
Okay.
They upheld the finding that, yeah, Bruner did violate Section 112.3136.
Okay.
Now, here's the key takeaway. The court really emphasized that these ethics laws are proactive.
Yeah.
It's not just about punishing someone after they've done something corrupt. It's about protecting the public trust and addressing any situation where there's a risk of power being misused.
I see.
Even if they can't prove that there was, like, evil intent behind it.
Right. So it's not just about the actual corruption. It's about the potential for corruption.
Right. It's that risk.
Okay.
So you think of it as a preventative measure to try and keep public office, you know, untainted.
So it's about preserving public confidence,
exactly.
Ensuring that these public officials are acting in everyone's best interests and not just for their own personal gain.
That's it. That's the heart of it.
Okay. So that makes sense. Now, the real turning point of the case, this is where that separation of powers really comes to a head, is the second question, the whole constitutionality of the court issuing a stay on the governor's suspension power.
Right.
So this is where the judicial and executive branches are butting heads.
Big time. And the court said that Section 112.3241, that part of the law that let a court temporarily block the governor's power to suspend someone, is unconstitutional.
Wow.
Their reasoning was pretty straightforward.
Okay.
They basically said, look, the governor's power to suspend an official comes straight from Article 4, Section 7 of the Constitution.
Right.
That's an inherent executive power,
uh-huh.
And it can't be messed with by a regular law.
I see.
They said, and I quote, the governor's power to suspend is independent of and may not be impinged upon by a statute.
Wow. So they're saying it very clearly here.
Yeah. They go on to say even a temporary delay of this power through a judicial stay impinges on the governor's constitutional power and is invalid.
So, like, they can't even pause it. They can't even delay it.
Exactly.
It's off limits.
And think about it. If the legislature could just give the courts the power to say no to the governor, even for a little bit when it comes to this core executive function,
right.
It would totally throw off the balance of power.
That makes sense.
So this ruling really reinforces the idea that each branch has its own separate and independent authority.
Yeah.
It's kind of like saying that the legislative branch can't pass a law saying the governor has to get permission from a judge before they can veto a bill.
Oh, I see.
It would just undermine the whole point of having these separate powers.
Okay, so that really clarifies the separation of powers in this context.
Yeah, it does.
So what about that last question? Did the governor suspending Bruner basically make the whole appeal pointless?
Yeah, the court said that because the governor acted, it made that appeal about the stay moot. Because once the governor actually used his power and suspended Bruner, the legal situation changed. The decision about whether to put Bruner back in office now fell to the governor and the Senate.
All right.
That's according to the Florida Constitution and its laws.
Okay.
So the court's decision about that stay didn't really matter anymore.
Right, because it had already happened.
Exactly.
Closing the barn door after the horse is bolted.
Right. The court couldn't really give Bruner any relief on that specific issue because the governor had already made a decision.
It makes sense.
It's kind of like arguing about a restraining order after the thing it was supposed to prevent already happened.
Oh, that's a great analogy. Uh-huh. Okay, so the ethics violation is upheld the law, allowing the court to issue that stay is struck down as unconstitutional. And the appeal is moot. So what does all this mean for, like, the average person? What is the significance of the Bruner case for understanding how Florida's government actually works?
So Bruner is a really good example of how the separation of powers actually plays out in Florida's government.
Mm.
It shows that certain powers that the governor has, like suspending officials, they're protected by the Constitution.
Yeah.
The legislature or the courts they can't limit those powers, even if they're trying to be temporary or just procedural.
Right.
And like we talked about, remember that analogy where a court tries to block a governor's veto?
Uh-huh.
That shows how important it is for each branch to have its own separate areas of authority.
Right.
But it also shows how important those ethics laws are.
Right. It's not just about punishing people after the fact.
Exactly. It's about making sure that the public trusts their government.
Yeah.
It's about preventing abuse of power. And, you know, those laws set the standards for how officials are supposed to behave.
Right.
They're supposed to avoid even looking like they're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
That's different from laws that are just focused on punishing people who are intentionally doing bad things.
So you're saying that these ethics laws are about preventing the appearance of impropriety.
Right. And that's important for maintaining public trust. Right. And I think Bruner is a really clear example of how the different parts of the legal and government system work together.
Yeah, like how they interact in practice.
Exactly. Right. We see how an administrative body, like the Ethics Commission, works with the judicial branch, that's the courts, and the executive branch, that's where the governor is.
Right.
And you mentioned this perplexity analysis. You know, it's interesting that while the specifics of what Bruner did weren't really the focus of the case, the decision clarified how we should interpret and apply those ethics laws.
Okay.
And the standard brief put it really well. The big takeaway is that any law that tries to give the courts the power to stop the governor from suspending someone, that's not going to fly.
Right.
Because it goes against the governor's power that comes directly from the Constitution.
So for our listeners out there, especially those of you who are in law school, what's the most important thing to take away from our deep dive into Bruner?
I think this case is a great example of how the separation of powers actually works in the real world. And it shows just how important it is for public officials to follow ethical rules.
Right.
Now, thinking about the outcome of Bruner, I think there's a really important question that comes up, and it's something you'll see again and again in your legal career. How do the courts make sure that things are fair and that everyone gets due process while still respecting the powers that the Constitution gives to the executive branch?
Right. So it's about finding that balance.
It is. And it's a key tension in our system of checks and balances.
Yeah.
I think it would be really helpful for you to look into other cases that deal with how the different branches of government interact and what limits their powers.
That's a great point. Those kinds of cases, they can really help you understand the big picture of the law.
They do.
And with that, I think we've reached the end of another deep dive. Thanks for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
As always.
Always good to be here.
Always a pleasure. And we'll catch you on the next one.
See ya.
Nah.
Bye.